such as that we are able to deal with novel words that have some morphological structure. So if I, for example, tell you now that I'm morphologizing you at the moment, I guess that you understand that you are being morphologized and that there is a verb to morphologize. And you wouldn't be able to think about these switches if you wouldn't have an idea that there is a stem and an affix in the word morphologizing. Furthermore, in the past decades, quite a big body of research accumulated that shows that there actually are some effects of morphological structure on lexical processing, being it effects of constituent frequency, that means that the frequency of the stem influences the processing of the whole word, or some effects showing morphological priming. So for accounting for these questions and also addressing the problem with novel words, maybe the other extreme approach would be better, which is the fully parsing approach, which says that everything that is possible to decompose will get decomposed. So all the words are decomposed into the smallest morphemic parts. An advantage of such a system would be that it's very economical because you can have one shared representation for all the words that share this given morpheme. On the other hand, retrieval of words would be a bit slower in comparison to the preceding approach because you would need to compute the meaning from the meanings of the smaller parts. Another problem with approach where you decompose whatever you can decompose is that in languages there are quite many words that seem to have a morphological structure, but actually they don't. So while you can without any problems, decompose words such as listener or writer into listen and then the affix. You cannot do the same for words like corner or brother, even though they seem to have the very same affix. And this would mean that if you would just decompose everything, you would quite often end up with an interpretation of meaning, which is not plausible, and you would have to reinterpret, and that's quite costly. So it seems that neither of these extreme approaches could explain all the complex processes connected with complex words. And as usual, a good way out is finding a compromise. So this would be reflected in dual root approaches. In these approaches, you assume that there is a separate root which deals with words that are stored in full forms, and then there's another root which would decompose words and deal with parts of words. Depending on a particular model, you can have the two roots running in parallel or serial, and as this can already account for most of the data that that is shown from experiments, this is something which is quite widely accepted at the moment. But it poses another question, and that is, where do we place the border between storage and decomposition? How can you tell if this particular word will get stored or will be decomposed? And this is a question that I would like to address as well. But before moving to it, I just would like to mention that the approaches I was speaking about until now, they are all quite linguistically based, I would say. They assume some explicit morphological representation in the brain. But there is also a more, let's say, cognitive approach, which says that there is no really explicit morphological representation, and the effects that we observe rather emerge as a function of overlap of meaning and form of the words. Explaining the whole differences between these approaches would be like for another talk, but what is important to remember is that nowadays there are two alternative approaches that can account for most of the findings from the experiments. The main difference would be that the dual root approaches are more linguistic. They assume that there are discrete morphematic representations in the brain, and they assume a clear border between words that get decomposed and stored. While the distributed connectionist approach would assume that there is no clear border, rather the effects are graded depending on the extent of the overlap between meaning and form. Maybe you're wondering how can we actually explore what happens to morphologically complex words in the brain. Well, the most common methods are a lexical decision task, which means you present a person with a word, such as depart, and ask them if they think it is a real word or not. Alternatively, you can precede this target word with a prime, so like departure, and afterwards you present the depart. And then you look at different combinations of these prime and target words, and you see if this priming word will help you in processing the subsequent word, or in the lexical decision if there's difference across conditions for complex word or simple words. Of course, in order to be able to isolate just morphological effects, you have to have control conditions, which would have, for example, for the priming, the same degree of phonological overlap, or other conditions which would have the same degree of semantic overlap, so that you can see that in the condition you are observing, if there is an effect, it's really just due to the morphology and not because the words are related by semantics or form. Usually in such experiments, you measure a reaction time, so how fast the people are in responding. But you can also measure more direct responses, such as the electric activity of the brain using event-related potentials, which has very good time resolution, so you can see more directly what happens after presenting a particular word. And also, there have been a couple of studies using fMRI. These are used mostly for localization purposes, as fMRI has a very good spatial resolution. And they were investigating whether there's a specific brain area dedicated for complex word processing or whether there are differences between subtypes of complex words. So, to the promised influences on complex word processing, so what would make a word to be decomposed or stored, or what would make this difference? I will mention just the most commonly presented factors, and these would be transparency. So the word is more probable to get decomposed if it's transparent in its relationship to the stem or to the lemma, and it should be transparent in all, like the form, the meaning, and the morphological structure. This is quite clear, I guess. Other thing that plays a role is also frequency of constituents, especially the stem. It's not so sure for the affixes. And there are also some interactions that the frequency plays a role, especially for words that are low frequency as wholes. Then if they have high frequency stem, then they would rather be decomposed and help them to be processed. And another argument which gets mentioned quite often is the type of an affix, where many people claim that there is a distinction between inflection and derivation, where inflection would be always decomposed, and so the representation would be shared for all the inflections, which is shown that the inflections can prime the lemma to the same extent as if you prime with the same word. While derivations should be stored. And I must say that I don't personally like this division, or this very strict division, as much. And this is something that I would also like to check in an experiment. And I've started with designing or preparing an experiment about this. The thing is that in the results, it's usually claimed that, okay, we inspect this, and now we say that there is this clear distinction between inflections or derivations. But for me, it might still be that the distinction is between whether the relationship of the affix and the stem is really transparent or a little bit more opaque. And even though the differences were found, they were also found for very prototypical derivations and inflections. But no one really looks at the part where the inflections get a bit more further from the meaning of the stem, or where the derivations are really, really transparent and predictable and very productive, which I think is actually really the space that should be interesting for us, because that's where we can find whether there's a straight line or a graded effect. And especially as for defining what derivation or inflection is, there are so many questions across languages. So I've read a study which is trying to differentiate between inflection and derivation, and it's done on Spanish, where it says that they used the examples like Nino and Nina, which is like a baby boy or baby girl, and they use this as inflection. While in Czech, the same thing, student and studentka, male student and female student, would be an example of derivation. So, I mean, if even linguists cannot agree on what is still a derivation and what is already inflection, how can we say there's a clear boundary for the brain? There was at least one study that looked into whether there are clear-cut or graded effects, but this study focused on derivations only and didn't go across the whole spectrum of possible affixes. And they found it indeed that depending on how semantically related the given derivation is to its lemma or to the stem, then there were like bigger priming effects. So I would like to do the same, but have both inflections and derivations. So far, I prepared a pretest questionnaire, and I've just finished collecting the responses, so I still have to evaluate them properly. But from the first look, it looks promising. And I would like to have conditions where I would have inflection, which is very semantically close to the stem, but also a derivation, which is considered by the people very semantically close. So Pekařův, belonging to Pekař, by many people, it seems to be just one word. They don't see it as another word, as we linguists do. And on the other hand, there are inflections which are considered to be semantically more distant from the stem, like Pekařům. I guess it's because of the plural form, which already shifts the meaning a bit. And then a semantically distant derivation, where Pekařka is again considered as being very different from Pekař. And so I would like to see how priming with the first words on the second words would be reflected on reaction times across the conditions. So I would like to compare these four conditions and see whether there are reaction time differences based on how semantically close or distant the pairs are. And there are two possible outcomes, or of course there are more, but two expected ones. Either we can see there's a strict difference between inflections and derivations, in which case we would see that condition number one and three would group together against condition two and conditions two and four. While if it is a rather a graded effect, as something that I expect, then we would see that across these conditions, the priming would gradually decrease, as it would be highest for the closer pairs and lower for the more distant pairs. Also, if I get nice results from the experiment, I would like to replicate it with a slightly different design where the primes wouldn't be presented as such, as just like you would read the word Pekařem and afterwards the word Pekař, but rather incorporate them into sentences, which is something which is not done very frequently, but I think it's quite problematic because especially for inflections, it's very artificial to see them just by themselves, to see somewhere Pekařům out of the context. And given the fact that already laboratory testing is super artificial situation for the province, then I would try to at least keep the words in the most natural settings possible. So that's what I would like to do next if this works. And then some other experiments, but that would be for another talk. Well, thank you for your attention. While thinking of questions, you can also ask your brain what it thinks about such a complex word that should be one of the most complex or longest words in English. Thank you for your attention. It's a super long questionnaire with loads of pairs of words, and I was just asking people whether they think that these two words are forms of one word. So just to see if they would relate it as one. And then I had more suffixes than the ones I presented here, but these seem to form the most distinct scores for the conditions. So I just wanted to see whether the different types of affixes would work. Because after asking some of my friends, I realized that their thinking about what is close and what is one word is very different from mine. So I really needed to do the questionnaire.
Well, I have two questions, maybe both of them. Stupid. Doesn't matter. Does the research in artificial neural networks like neural language models or machine translation using the recurrence neural networks somehow influence the ideas how how the letters and how the words are stored in the brain?
I think it's still kept quite distant. So you might try to make a model based on your findings to just like see if it would work. But I don't think that it's that the neurolinguists would constantly check what the people in the artificial intelligence are doing and trying to. I think it's still very divided.
My second question is how this theory deals with numbers, because we usually think that this number, even if there is a long number, we treat it as a single word. But it does not seem that the people should have stored it in their medical lexicon. So.
Well, I must have never thought about it. I think there's a special bunch of research dedicated to number and calculations, and I have never even read anything that would be connected to morphology that would consider numbers actually, but I can have a look at it, but I really don't know. But of course I wouldn't assume that every possible number would have its own representation. That wouldn't make much sense, right? So if you have the lexical you always have to have a task. That's also why you rarely use sentences, and it's easier to use words. So if you have a lexical decision task where you ask the people, is this a real word or no? Then they, whenever they see the word, they have to press a button, yes or no. And then you record these response times. I did not. I was thinking about it if I would be doing something with verbs, but it's also important that when you're trying to match your stimuli, you wouldn't want to mix prefixes and suffixes. So this would make sense. I was actually thinking about it because especially the Czech prefixes for verbs are very confusing for everyone, and it would be a nice control to have something super productive such as a negation. But, yeah, well, for this it wouldn't be really applicable as I'm looking at suffixes.